Hi, I'm Chris Lamont and welcome to Talking Business. The importance of small business is often referred to or described as one of the essential organs of the body. My personal view is that such alliteration is unnecessary when in New South Wales we're talking about 850,000 small businesses who pay over $66 billion in wages. The fundamental of importance of small business, however, is often overlooked. So today I'm lucky to be talking to the CEO of COSBOA, Council of Small Business Organisation of Australia, Luke Akerstrat. Welcome, Luke.
Thanks, Chris. Great to be here.
Now, Luke, you've been with COSBOA now for, just over 12 months or thereabouts.
Yep.
Can you tell us a bit more about your background and how you came to this role?
Yeah, thanks, Chris. And look, great to be here on your podcast. And firstly, wanted to acknowledge the great work the Commission does, particularly under your leadership and the role you play in really, I guess, supporting small business, not just in New South Wales, but also organisations like COSBOA. Look, I've been at the helm for about 12 months now with COSBOA, so it's fair to say I'm slightly off my probation period by now. Look, I've really enjoyed the last 12 months, certainly a challenging time for the sector. Where did I come from? I've sort of kicked around the sort of policy advocacy world for probably the best part of a decade now, sort of started my career at an association in the minerals space. Also had the pleasure of working for Andrew Robb, who was Australia's trade minister for a number of years. That really gave me good insight, good exposure into, I suppose, the inner workings of government. More recently, I was heading up the New South Wales division of the Property Council, you know, a very slick, very professional organisation, and learn a heck of a lot from that role in terms of, you know, how to actually get advocacy outcomes. But I suppose what's really, you know, unique here for me is I've actually run a small business. So I started a small business with a colleague, Pete McConnell. It was an online recruitment platform. It was seeking to disrupt traditional recruitment, seeking to disrupt the bricks and mortar model of recruitment, which we know, you know, has its limitations. So that was a really great four and a half years. We had to do everything from raise capital, you know, read P&Ls, provide investor updates, put in a strategic plan, and all the red tape and paperwork that that involves. So, you know, we did think it was quite ironic, for example, that two guys who had pretty significant experience working in government were both pulling their hair out with procurement. You know, we just couldn't figure out where to start in terms of actually selling our services into government. So we found that was a bit ironic. And that's just one of the few, I suppose, lived examples that I've had in small business that made me really keen on this role. And just a little bit about my background too. You know, I talk a lot about this. My grandparents came to Australia in the 50s. And, you know, you've talked about the importance there of small businesses in terms of consumers, but small businesses really are a pathway for migrants to this country of ours to actually give them a livelihood and actually help them adapt, adopt, and improve. My grandparents started a hydraulic servicing industry. Being from Holland, they tend to know a fair bit about hydraulics and engineering and those sorts of things. So it's my concern that at the moment, in 2024, it's harder to start and run a small business than it was in 1954. When migrants were coming to this country.
Excellent. I think it's important for us to realise that too, that your role in COSBOA's remit is national, state, territory and local government. So I guess how do you manage all of that? You know, you don't have hundreds of people in the COSBOA offices. How do you prioritise and how do you really get to the nub of the issue that's impacting your members or your members' members?
Mm. But COSBOA, I suppose, is that peak for small business in Australia can really amplify a lot of those concerns. So you're right, we're a small team in terms of internal and in terms of headcount, but the volunteer hours we get from our members, the expert committees we have, the policy panels we have, we really tap into a lot of our member organisations. But look, you're right, local, state and federal, I think a lot of issues we see are these levels of government not talking to each other. You know, we're yet to even see a national small business strategy in this country. On Friday, as I mentioned to you, I'm meeting with small business ministers meeting in Melbourne, which is an attempt at bringing together Commonwealth with all the various state ministers as well. But there is a big breadth there for COSBOA. But really, at the moment, we're trying to focus on, you know, what are the three or four big issues we can really have an impact on? Because I think, as we've seen, if you try to boil the ocean, you know, your impact can be quite limited. So that's the focus at the moment. Continue to be close to the membership and really let them inform the direction of the organisation.
You've mentioned a couple of times the interactions with government and, you know, perhaps their interactions or lack of interaction with each other. Do you get a sense that they really understand, the people that you're dealing with in government, understand the challenges and the concerns of small business at this time?
Look, I think unless you've actually been in the hot seat and run a small business, it's pretty hard to actually have a true empathy for that, you know, lived experience. You know, a lot of the time we're asked, you know, how do you define a small business? And you can get into this esoteric conversation about 15, 20, 25 or revenue thresholds. But really, a small business owner is someone who picks up the phone to place their order, picks up the phone to hear the customer complaint, picks up the phone to talk to the ATO. You know, and this is really hard for, I suppose, a lot of people to really get their head around. So we don't really believe that governments are doing a great job at all in respect to that lived experience. You know, a self-employed beautician working out of their spare bedroom, for them to have the same obligations to store, delete, you know, discharge your obligations of data and consumer data, to be on the same par as a big entity like Google, to me doesn't make much sense at all. So I think what's the answer to all of this? There's no point just complaining about it. What we actually need is mandatory, legislated, enforced small business impact statements. And by that, I mean genuine impact statements. Impact statements where small businesses have been consulted either directly or indirectly through COSBOA, and there's been some genuine modelling on the impact that these changes will have. So that is the only real way that we can put a bit of a, I suppose, check and balance on a lot of this legislation that's going through. And they need to be stress tests. A lot of the assumptions that these impact statements make simply, frankly, don't pass the pub test. Again, I come back to the latest tranche of IR changes. The so-called small business impact statement was a couple of pages long, pretty dismal piece of work, whereas the impact statement on the human rights implications of the bill, the environmental implications of the bill, I'm not sure how changing the definition of casuals affects the environment, but the government felt they needed a, you know, a very long piece of work on that. But the assumption that was that a small business would take 15 minutes, you heard me right, 15 minutes to actually interpret, read, understand, implement, and manage the new employment classification. So if you can find me a small business who's been able to rewrite an entire employment agreement within a quarter of an hour, I'll be extremely surprised.
I'm glad you mentioned small business impact statements, because it's been an issue that I've been on for quite some time, and the need for regulation to be good for business and for consumers. And I've made the point to you and with your members that regulation shouldn't harm one party over another. It should be genuinely developed for both. So I think we've got a lot of work to do there, and I agree with you. I don't think any level of government is doing a great job in respect to those impact statements. I want to talk a bit more about business associations, because it seems to be a bit of a crowded space, and a space that has fluctuations more often than not on the talent that's in the role or the talent that's in a board, as opposed to a commitment to a cause or a particular group. How have you found that? And I guess the extension of that, are there too many groups? Is it confusing for small businesses in particular to know who they should join or why they should join?
Yeah, look, I think it can be confusing. I mean, my first experience in this space was when I was a political advisor to Andrew Robb. You know, I mentioned he had the trade portfolio, but at that period, tourism was a part of the trade portfolio. And I was given responsibility to manage that portfolio for the minister, and was very intrigued when I received the briefing from the department and opened up to page one, list of stakeholders. And there was about 25 different peak bodies all claiming to be, you know, the source of truth for tourism. Now, that example is an interesting one, because we know that tourism is, you know, diverse, it's unique, you've got different players in that space, you've got the visitor economy, you've got business events, of course, they all deserve to have a voice. But what struck me was that their inability at times to agree on matters made life harder for them, but ironically easier for me. And this is really the point, is, you know, if you can't find common ground, if you can't get, you know, the airports and the airlines agreeing on a couple of things, if you can't get the travel agents and the booking websites agreeing on a few things, well, unfortunately, inertia just sets in. So whether there's too many small groups in small business, I would say no, but I would say we need to coordinate them. And that's why I really see the role running COSBOA as being a real honour and a real privilege, because you're empowered through, as I said, 40 or 50 small business organisations to be that sort of layer on top of really amplifying their voice. So I think the key to success in membership associations is, as I said, just sticking close to your members. They are your boss. They pay your salary. And particularly at the moment, we know small businesses are struggling. You know, you only have to look at your momentum survey that goes out. You only need to look at the Small Business Matters report from the Ombudsman. The profitability of small business is being eroded. Owners are working longer than ever before.
That's a good point. Speaking truth to power is something that you and I have spoken about over the last 12 months in some detail, and frank and fearless advice is not always gratefully received. How have you found it as a sort of advocate slash lobbyist, and do you have any sort of techniques that you can share for those that have perhaps not as proficient or not as experienced as you may be?
You need to play the occasion. Different events have different roles. You know, we had our National Small Business Summit this year, which was highly successful, had a range of stakeholders, including the PM, et cetera. Now, you invite the PM, he speaks to 300 people. You're not going to put him on the spot in front of everyone and try to start a fight. But it is about having that credibility over a period of time, that you're having those hard conversations with his advisors, with the department, and all the rest of it. So I think, what would my advice be? Well, my advice would be, what's your actual strategy in terms of what are you actually trying to achieve? And then what are the communications channels that you have as part of that? So one might be mainstream media, where you have a certain tone of voice. One might be more traditional financial media, where you have a slightly different tone of voice as well. Then you'll be interacting with ministers, where you'll have a slightly different tone of voice as well. And then, of course, the department, who require, a very different approach in terms of, impact statements, modelling and evidence. So it's just about ensuring that, the three principles of communication, audience, purpose and context, are being kept in mind. But ultimately, at the end of the day, have you satisfied yourself that you're speaking truly and honestly on behalf of your members? Because again, I keep coming back to it, members will walk away, if they feel there are deals being done or if they feel there are arrangements being entered into without their consultation. As you said, it's a crowded marketplace. There are many other places people can go. So sticking close to your members and actually empowering them as well, Chris. So I think what's a better advocate than actually hearing direct, or what's better advocacy than actually hearing directly from a small business? So I'll just give you one example. The paid parental leave scheme that the federal government has extended at their own expense. So, ticks to them for actually paying for that extension of PPL. But the administration of that is going to be quite costly. And even the government's own modelling has said that small businesses will take about 15 hours to actually get their head around administering that payment. Now, Services Australia have 34,000 staff. The average small business has 3 staff. By not giving small businesses the ability to opt in or opt out and effectively let Services Australia administer that, by removing that choice for small business, that's going to have a huge impact in terms of their red tape, in terms of their compliance costs, in terms of their administrative burden. I did a press conference with Senator Lambie and Senator Pocock talking about this. That's appropriate. I'm the spokesperson. We do that in front of the camera. But then as a follow-up off camera, we take actual small businesses, people who actually have private capital at risk, people who actually sit around their kitchen table at night pulling their hair out with all this admin, to do a lot of the engagement with government and to actually, I suppose, provide credibility to that advocacy. So I think, a lot of our associations, the CEOs have big profiles, and that's part of, I suppose, how the cookie crumbles. But giving small businesses that direct voice, where possible. We had a round table with David Pocock during the IR consultation with about 15 or 16 Canberra small businesses. They're his constituents. These people vote for him. I live in Sydney. I don't vote for David Pocock. So by actually giving members of parliament direct access to small businesses in a clever, coordinated way, but in a genuine way, that is a pretty good place to start.
No, it's good advice. In terms of, you mentioned the national summit that you held earlier this year in Sydney. Is it possible to describe the sort of the top three issues that were raised at the summit, or raised perhaps by small businesses themselves?
Look, I'd say the top three issues were energy costs. I'd say the second one was actually, are small businesses being listened to? And then I'd say the third one was, what's actually the pathway forward? So it was quite a good contest of ideas. We were really pleased with the turnout to our summit. As I mentioned, we had the PM there, we had the opposition leader, we had the Minister for Small Business, the Shadow Minister for Small Business, we had the New South Wales Premier, the list goes on, had a very good turnout. But what actually is the pathway forward? And what we found was, what we've always found is it's pretty easy for politicians to talk a big game. I've never met a politician who doesn't say, you know, small business is the backbone of the economy, or small business is the engine of the
spleen or heart.
The spleen, or yeah, that's right. The essential organs, yeah. That one's unique. Essential organs is unique. But it's actually a sense of, well, what's next? So we made a deliberate decision to bring together some of the Teals or independent MPs to speak on a panel too, noting that they will have significant influence. They continue to do so and might be even more so the case. Energy costs definitely came through. So you had the two leaders of the major parties kind of trading blows on what does that pathway look like in terms of the energy transition and in terms of getting energy costs down. And I think for a lot of our small businesses in attendance, fair to summarize their position as pretty technology agnostic. You know, if you're running a gelato store, you just want your fridge to be cold enough to actually store the gelato. You know, you're not necessarily waking up in the middle of the night worried that it's solar powered or fossil fuel powered or nuclear powered for that matter, but actually getting those energy costs down. So, you know, this summit was in the lead up to the federal budget. So there were some pretty high expectations about what might be announced in that budget. And there wasn't a whole lot, to be honest. Obviously, the energy rebate, thanks, but $300 isn't necessarily going to touch the sides. The extension of the instant asset write-off, again, thanks, but pretty much sort of the bare minimum that I think industry was expecting, and noting that the legislation for the current financial year, unbelievably, what are we today, 11th of June, has still not passed the Senate, with that program said to expire in about 19 days. So that was a bit of a flavour of the summit, but I should probably just add into that mix the resilience, Chris. You know, so a lot of what we've talked about, you know, so far is really the challenges, you know, small businesses being ignored, what are the roadblocks? And we know that there are real pressure points, but, you know, there were some good success stories. You know, small businesses are proving their resilience. We had Susan Galvin from Galvin Watches, you know, who's utilized your services as well. And we awarded the Small Business Champion for 2024, a guy, Gary Strong, who's also known as the Deadly Hair Dude. And he's all about small businesses creating self-empowerment and agency for young Indigenous kids in the top end. So he's actually training young Indigenous kids, you know, in conjunction with TAFE and giving them the opportunity to work in small business to actually go into hairdressing and barber. And he's finding that is working really well. And this is just one example where when we actually do empower small businesses to succeed, we actually do empower small businesses to remain in business, they can actually have, you know, life-shaping and, you know, career-shaping impacts on young kids around Australia.
You mentioned perhaps that we don't celebrate the success or the value of small businesses enough, and I think that's 100% true. We tend to focus, for those that have been in this space for a while, on the challenges and the frustrations and the limitations, but to what extent do you think, I guess, the fact that we haven't celebrated the importance of small business and, I guess, all of the negativity that we're influencing the next generation of entrepreneurs not to go in that direction? Is it something that we should be conscious of? And if it is or it isn't, how do we, more importantly, make it easier for the next generation of small business owner operators?
Well, yes, it is something we should be focusing on and we should be conscious of. I think it's linked to the meta issue here. The real meta problem of what we're talking about is that small businesses are taken for granted. You know, there's 2.5 million small businesses in Australia. Every electorate, metro or regional, every shopfront, every street corner has a small business, but they are almost so pervasive that they're taken for granted. And this feeds into the extent to which we're not celebrating our small businesses. It's as if, you know, unless there's a shiny new gadget that they're bringing to market, you know, their story isn't worth telling. You know, this is a conversation I have at large with, you know, event organizers, entrepreneurial events, entrepreneurship hubs. It's as if a small business owner is wearing skinny jeans and Converse All-Stars, their business is somewhat more worthy because they're, you know, using venture capital and they're using all the latest buzzwords, when in fact that business model may be unsustainable. It might not be profitable, but, you know, they've got the two-page spread in the tech magazines, and that apparently is what success looks like. Whereas then you have someone, you know, making watches, putting in the long hours, doing what we might call innovation by increment, not looking to revolutionize the world overnight with AI, but just looking to chip away and have a productive, sustainable business model. That to me is, if not as worthy, more worthy of success. So I think you're definitely onto a few themes there. I think we need to not necessarily lionize our small businesses, but shine a bit of a light on some of those individual case studies and really peeling back. You know, I'd love it if every time a politician said that small businesses are the engine room of the economy, why don't they name three in their electorate?
Luke, thank you for taking the time to chat today, and we obviously look forward to your success in this role and your contribution to supporting small businesses of today, but importantly, as we've just outlined, small businesses of the future.
Thanks for having me, Chris. Great to talk to you.
We'll be back shortly with another episode of Talking Business.